Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen.
And I'm Nora El Maliki. Tonight, the censored lesbian poet from Russia's Silver Age, Sofia Parnok, whom some call Russia's Sappho. Sappho being the classic Greek lyric poet from the island of Lesbos, whose work has been echoed for centuries.
The long-hidden work of Sofia Parnok is being brought out of the shadows in a world premiere concert this month in San Francisco and Oakland.
Translated and set to music by Eric Banks, Parnok's poems will be performed by Oakland-based women's chorus Kitka in an evening called I Will Remember Everything.
Kitka specializes in Eastern European women's vocal music and has been cited as one of the USA's premier touring ensembles. Kitka started working with composer Banks on the Sofia Parnok tribute 3 years ago, before Russia's recent anti-gay crackdown. Now, this month's world premiere is even more poignant.
We stopped by Kitka's rehearsal space Monday night to bring you an intimate preview of the concert's harmonies and rhythms, and to speak with Kitka's artistic director Shira Sion and composer Eric Banks.
I just want to say thank you for letting us, like, Kitka obviously has confidence that you would let us come to a rehearsal a week and a half before you're actually performing, because you know it's going to be, like, fantastic by the time you get there. How is it to have, like, reporters come to your rehearsals?
Well, I think it was a good scare tactic to sort of get us to up the ante a little bit. And I think it's always good, you know, it's sort of giving little sneak previews is kind of, I think it's a fun part of the process of working the piece up.
I think also it's fun because the poetry is so vulnerable and the music is so vulnerable to be in that kind of vulnerable state in rehearsal, because this is really like where everything hits the fan now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like everyone starts struggling with what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And the closer you are to perfect, the more painful it becomes, right? There's an urgency in getting everything together. But I love like NPR stories where like you hear a rehearsal rather than a performance.
Yeah.
People in radio are always really interested in hearing how the sausage is made, or do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like they want to hear about the process.
Right.
So I think that's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
So tell us about this piece that I'm going to say we just heard, page 13.
Oh. Okay. So "Как рассказать" is the Russian phrase "How do I describe" or "How to describe," and it's one of Sofia Parnok's first poems that it talks about things that occur in nature. So it's very visual, like how do I describe the golden woven beam that is tossed by the lazy emerald waves? It's a really lovely image. But what she's really discovering in this poem is how does she describe who she is? And she's writing this as an 18-year-old. She's writing it in 1903 as an 18-year-old. It's full of this kind of, for me, this kind of stormy, passionate discovery. She's really trying to find who she is.
Do you remember any of the words that you can, you know, refer to?
Ooh, let's see. I think I sing the Russian ones.
You do sing the Russian. So half of Kitka is singing. Half of Kitka is singing Russian, and half is singing English, and they sing them simultaneously. This is one of the choral ensemble movements rather than a solo movement. So, and you can hear how ferocious it is, kind of chasing itself around. But did you see it?
So the drunken delirium of the tuberose in love,
and the iridescent play of colors on seashells.
Wonderful. Or the lonely tears of the weeping willow. How can I describe these?
How can I describe the golden woven beam? Always tossed around the can I describe thee?
So can you tell us what the process was like of interpreting the poems for melodies and harmonies and turning it into song?
Well, the process is much longer than just writing the music, right? So for the last year, I've been studying her poems and reading about her life. She wrote, between 1903 and 1933, she wrote 400 poems. And that's really from when she was 18 to when she was 48. So so there are many things I can say, but she was sick a lot. She suffered from Graves' disease, which was a hypothyroid disease, and would have kind of tachycardia and would have fits of lots of energy and lots of then being bedridden for a long time. So there, she had a life that was very kind of stormy when it comes to her health. I read the 400 poems in Russian, and then I translated 28 that are in this piece. And the piece is 75 minutes long. And I came down in January and met with Kitka to start the residency and got to know the voices and came to three rehearsals here at the Silk Road House. And then I started to construct the architecture of the piece, which has to do with the eight lovers that Sofia had over the course of her life. And there are eight women in Kitka. So, and Sofia wrote poems and dedicated them to these eight women over the course of her life. So each woman in Kitka sings a poem that's dedicated to a particular woman. And they could either sing as that woman or as Sofia is around that woman. So that's the pillars of the architecture around those eight things. There are also eight other arias that the women sing that are Sofia's own reflections on her life. So her coming out or her really horrible relationship with her memory or relationships with her family or friends or just like things that are mysterious to her but aren't about love. And then these two different kinds of arias are the pillars, so 16 different movements for this for the eight women. These are bound together by these choral ensemble pieces, and Kakraskazats is one of them. So it's Russian and English kind of simultaneously on top of each other. So every single Russian word that's sung, you can hear, the Russian speakers will be able to hear the meter and the rhyme that she invented, and that she created. And then in the English, all of the people that speak English will be able to understand the meaning of the words. So, and all of those are, the first thing that you learn as a composer when you're studying text is rhythm, right? You have to declaim the rhythm clearly in order for the text to be understood.
So how, tell us about Sofia Parnok and how she compares to Sappho, because I think Sappho, you're kind of calling her Russia's Sappho.
Yeah. Well, I know that Sappho was a tremendous inspiration and muse to Parnok, and she even dedicates poems to Sappho as her sort of muse and...
She has an entire book called Sapphic Strophes.
That's right.
So, or Sapphic Stanzas, or however you translate the Russian. So it's, she has an entire collection of poems that are to Sappho or about Sappho.
And I recall reading in her biography that there was sort of a sapphic rage during the Silver Age of Russian letters, like, which was sort of fashionable in poetic circles. But I can imagine for someone like Parnok, who is coming to know herself, coming to know her identity, coming to know herself as an artist and as a sexual being, to have... Sappho was sort of a predecessor as a poet. Must have been a sort of Sappho must have represented a sort of beacon for her, a sort of guide, a sort of trailblazer, in whose steps she could follow. I can't think of any other poets that she might have, female poets that she might have had familiarity with, who would have done that for her. So I can imagine, as a historical figure,
right.
So was this sort of, I don't know, this acceptance or almost celebration of being gay or lesbian at this time, was this a very short-lived thing? And then the Russian government came down and kind of said, well, forget that. We're going to censor you now. What happened?
Well, I don't know that it ever got to be a celebration.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever culturally accepted.
Yeah.
I think that it was...
Among the literati.
Right. So the other point I'll make about Sappho and Russians is that, the Russian alphabet is based on the Greek alphabet. And there's a fascination in Russian culture with Greeks all the time. Mm-hmm. And the first line of my piece, this this one, "Вспомнить со временем кто-нибудь верит в нас," is a quote from Sappho, and it's one that she used at the beginning of certain poems that Parnok used, and it's "Believe me, someone in the future will remember us," mm-hmm. which is a great sentiment when Parnok is looking at Sappho and thinking about her own work in the future, mm-hmm. right? She's kind of the point between Sappho and us.
You're hearing Out in the Bay. I'm Nora Elmaligi with Eric Jansen. We're speaking with Shira Sion, Artistic Director of Women's Vocal Ensemble Kitka, and composer Eric Banks. Kitka performs I Will Remember Everything, composed by Banks from love poems of censored Russian lesbian poet Sophia Parnok, June 20th to 22nd in San Francisco and Oakland. You can find concert information on Kitka's website, kitka.org. That's spelled K-I-T-K-A, kitka.org. So was Sophia Parnok, was there activism in her work, or was it really just her existence as an openly lesbian poet that was empowering to people?
I think of her poems as being very intimate and very personal, and it's sort of that old style, like Adrienne Rich, personal being political sort of activism.
That's right.
Rather than her trying to like start some sort of movement, or her being sort of a out in the street protest type of artist. I think her expressions are very romantic and very 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 intimate mm-hmm. and very passionate. But I think her just expressing all that full spectrum of emotions that you'll hear in Eric's piece are, I think, what make them political pieces, but not so much, I would say, activist.
No,
in the conventional sense.
I mean, I think activism is a very 20th, 21st century idea anyway. But I think that one of the things that I've noticed in her poetry is a very clear shift between the lover being masculine and the lover being feminine. So you all of a sudden see feminine pronouns in the teens, or you know, in her early work. And there really is a shift. Like all of a sudden it's from him to her as the lover. And so she published quite a bit and was a translator of Baudelaire, the French poet. And then as soon as she started coming out in her poetry, she was no longer published. Like, people just wouldn't publish her anymore. And after that, she really became destitute. Like, she became our version of homeless and really couch surfs for a while in friends' homes, and stayed with, basically made her home with many of her lovers. But she was always really proud of that misery because she really didn't want to depend on anyone. For me, the most beautiful story about her and the most activist story about her is after her death. Can I tell that story? So she died in a town, in like a small town about 75 kilometers from Moscow. And when she died, three of her lovers were there. This is very typical of lesbians of that era. I think maybe today that, I mean, the lesbians become friends even after they break up, and the relationships, they just continue. But she died in a very small town, and there was a one horse in the town. And when people heard of her death, it was in August. They came to the town and they built her a casket out of pine. And one of her lovers, Olga, was a physics professor, and she had like a chemical that she sprinkled on the body. And at dawn, they left that town with the horse and carriage and the casket on the carriage, the coffin on the carriage, and they walked with the horse back to Moscow. And there's a crowd of people that followed this horse, or led this horse, because I guess it was a slow-moving horse. And when they got to the city limits of Moscow, there was some kind of, I think, an influenza epidemic going on, and they had to take all side streets to get to her home, because they had to hide from the police. They couldn't take major roads, and they like wove their way through. And for me, this story is like an amazing testament to her life and her work, that people came from Moscow to go to this small town to walk back with her body. And then have a wake, and then have a funeral and a burial. But and it was a large crowd of people. It was a sizable crowd of people that were all kind of clandestinely staying away from the police to honor her. So for me, it's one of these things that you see in Russian cinema, or one of these things that, you know what I mean? Like, it's a really cinematic image, but really, really beautiful about her life.
So some of the part of the singing that were captured in your rehearsal was... what he remembers. Caitlin singing about her death. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
So what's really fantastic about this poem is that Nina is far away. She's in another city taking a vacation, and they've been sending letters back and forth to each other. And with the postal service, you send a letter every single day during that era in the hopes that one gets through. So she gets Nina's letter and writes this poem and sends it back to her in order to tell her that she's dying. So Nina gets there just in time before she dies. And then the next movement is actually Sophia's final words, and she actually speaks a quatrain. Like, she says four lines, and they are, «На голову садую, ни глаз, эту я целую последний раз». So you hear the rhyme, right? Glas and ras. And it means, upon your silver head and not upon your eyes, here I will kiss you for this final time. Mm-hmm. So she's saying that to her two lovers that are sitting there, Olga and Nina. And I mean, it doesn't matter who she's saying it to. She's her last words are a poem, basically. Mm-hmm. So she's really, to me, she's a cult figure, although she's not in Russia. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I were to have a cult figure, she would be that important to me. I mean, not because she's an activist, but because she led this life of incredible sacrifice and beauty and courage.
Aggression, violence against LGBT rights in Russia, and I wonder just how that affects the intention of this, you know, concert and the tribute to Sophia Parnok.
Well, for me as a performer, I have to say it makes me feel all the more passionate about this piece. I feel passionate about the music. I feel passionate about Eric as a composer. And when we started talking about this project back in 2011, it was sort of before this surge of atrocity in Russia. And we sort of felt it building as we were sort of developing the piece and starting to raise money and trying and just sort of gathering momentum for it. So I think as things intensified in Russia, I think our feeling of zeal and like we have to do this and it's incredible that we have this opportunity to do this now of all times, I think certainly gave me a lot of charge about it and a lot of excitement and feeling like this has to be heard now. And so many people would not recognize Sophia Parnok. Like, who is this? And why do we not know who she is? And what better time to talk about that why than now?
I love uncovering secrets like this in my work. So it's really important to me to do this. I mean, I've done other pieces about other social justice causes, and I love translating because I'm a polyglot and it's kind of my thing. But I have a friend that is our age that grew up in Russia and had no idea who Sophia Parnok was because of the way that she was, I mean, her education, she has no idea. And when she found out about this project, she was floored. So that someone like that existed and that her poetry is now available online, for instance. There are Russian sites that have it. I don't think of it so much as a piece that is about gays and lesbians or about the kind of social justice fight. These poems are so much about a love that is universal. The object of the pronouns, it just doesn't matter, the gender. And I mean, I want everyone to hear it because the poetry is beautiful. I mean, people can think what they want about the music or about the performance. I think the poetry is stunning. And that I felt really lucky to find it. And I had so much fun translating it. So, the rehearsing is great and the music is great, but for me, it's about the words. It's always starts with the words. So that answers your earlier question about, you know, maybe a little bit about how music comes from it. I mean, it's just focusing on this text and how do you get the text across? You know, if I were to have a poetry reading of Sophia Parnok's poems, 5 people would show up, you know? But so in a way, we're activists. We're proponents for this work because I've translated it and we're performing it and composing music. So more and more people will be able to hear this. And we're making a CD of it. Like, I mean, we're actually doing a studio recording of the piece. So hopefully people in Russia will be able to know who Parnok is and read her words. So maybe we're the activists, but not for LGBT, just for beauty
and love.
Yeah, and love. Right? Yeah. So,
and I also have to say, it's been really interesting for Kitka coming out on a limb, as it were, doing this project. We've received some incredible reactions from our audience, incredible calls from older lesbians who've just called the office saying, I saw this flyer, or I got your mailer, or I received your funding appeal. And there was one woman who was in her late 70s who said, I thought I was the only person who knew about Sophia. She was just so deeply moved that, like, somebody was equally smitten with Parnok's words and what they meant. And I guess she and her lover, who had passed away, used to send these poems back and forth to each other. And so she ended up making a modest donation in memory of her deceased lover.
I
didn't have time to tell you,
it's okay.
And there have been several of these phone calls of just people coming in. And I think, especially for the older generation of lesbians, they can relate to Sophia's life and her plight and her struggle to express and just to be. I think one of the things that's so fascinating and inspiring about Sophia Parnok's life is she was so herself. It seems like she just could not.
She was really unapologetic.
Yeah,
really uncompromising, really unapologetic. She just was.
Yeah.
Sure.
There was a part you had the singers repeat tonight, which was this. It started out with, speaking of bickering, this really intense chatter. I don't remember what section that was,
yeah,
but what's that about?
So this is from the year before she died. It's a poem called My Incurable Passion. On this night, my last night on earth, before the fire between us cools into embers, I will press my parched and thirsty lips upon yours, my silver love. My incurable passion. So the silver is referring to the hair.
And as they're singing, there seems to be this real cacophony. There's like all these different voices and conversations all going on at once, more than I noticed in any other part.
Yeah.
So how does that relate to the poem?
So what happens is, in a very low register, the 4 Russian voices sing the 4 Russian. So the 4 women, the 2 highest women in the choir and the 2 lowest women in the choir, in terms of the vocal range, sing this the 4 lines of the poem, repeat it over and over again, kind of like speaking in tongues, like very, very fast. And then the 4 middle voices of the choir sing in unison the English text. And it starts very, very low in a G, I think, and then it ends up on this very high chord to over two octaves higher. And then at one point, when they get to that chord, all of the patter that's in the Russian jumps up the octave. And you hear this kind of, and it is, it's supposed to be impassioned. It's supposed to be, for me, the last gasp of passion. Because she's writing the year before she dies, when she's very frail, very sexy poetry about what she wishes she could do. So does that make sense? Like it's unrequited physical activity.
What do you want people to take away from the tribute concert and Sophia Parnok's life?
The piece isn't about lesbians. It's about a person's life and about her courage. And I
and about love and about love, creativity and an individual struggle to be themselves, to express themselves, to realize themselves in a really intensely oppressive time. I mean, I can only imagine, you know, how Sophia would be living life if she were here in San Francisco with us now.
I mean, having like a chronic illness and giving up your job by coming out, like knowing that if you know what I mean, if you wrote this poem and published this poem, that you would lose your work, and then have to live with your, you know, be homeless or live with friends or be on their, do you know what I mean? Like, be beholden to them.
And she had the option. I mean, early in her career, she was publishing under a male pseudonym, and then she chose not to anymore. Yeah. And she easily could have done that and written all of her poems with her female pronouns and probably gotten away with it and maybe would have become as famous as Tsvetaeva or someone like that. But but she chose to be honest and to be authentic. And I think as artists, we really respond to any sort of, you know, true, authentic, brave, vulnerable, tender, intimate expression. And I think audiences are going to feel that as well.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Thanks to our guests, Shira Sion of Kitka and Eric Banks, composer of I Will Remember Everything. The world premiere will be Friday, June 20th, and Sunday, June 22nd at St. Gregory of Nyssa Episcopal Church in San Francisco, and on Saturday, June 21st at the Garden of Memory at Chapel of the Chimes in Oakland.
If you missed part of the broadcast, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outinthebay.org, by about 9 p.m. tonight, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app that lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. Write to us at outinthebay@yahoo.com.
I'm Eric Jansen.
And I'm Nora El-Maliki. Thanks for listening.